session number 10768, reel 2.
Mr. John Granger, Reel 2. You mentioned the Boys' Brigade was your Friday night activity. When did you join the Boys' Brigade?
Well, actually, I joined the 47th Boys' Brigade at their inception. And
that was 1913-14?
That would be in 1913. And I was in them, member of them, till I went in the army.
In 17.
And in the meantime, I'd had the drum, one of the side drums. I was a side drummer. And we had a bugle band, which we made over the years, built up. And as I say, that used to take up the Friday nights.
What would you actually do? How was the Boys' Brigade organised?
Well, it was a...
How many were there in the 47th?
Oh, there was in that.
There's a photograph here. Yeah. Is that the whole lot?
That's a complete company. Yes. Here is about 50 in that, from there. You see, we've got... There's the drums, you see. Well, I had one of the side drums. And we used to go parading around the parish Sunday morning, waking the lazy folks up, you know, before we went into church. We were church workers, really. That was our function.
What sort of work do you mean?
Well, keeping in touch with the congregation and doing bits of jobs in the church and all that. Anything. We had a football team.
Did you play football?
Yes, we were in the Boys' Brigade League. They had a league of brigades throughout Manchester and Salford.
Was it association football?
Yes, association for football. And we had a team in it, in the league. And as a matter of fact, at one period, we had the curate playing on the team for us, because he was only a young fella. And he enjoyed sport and joined our team, used to play with us. Consequently, if anybody tripped you over out like that, it was no use effing and blinding them, because the curate was there, you see. Language had to be of the best while he was about. But in any case, we never used any of that sort of language.
The religious aspect was very important.
We had to go to church. We did church parades special years. We were a church organisation.
What about a uniform? There's pictures here of it. Could you describe it for us, sir?
Oh, the only uniform you had was the pillbox hat and the white
belt
there, and then of course your stripes, if you got any, on your arm. That was all it was. It was just a pillbox and your haversack across over your shoulder.
Was there any military aspect to it? Did you do any drill or anything like that?
Oh, we were drilled.
What kind of drill?
Oh, we used to do marches and all the rest of it. Nothing great. We did parades round the parish at Whitweek when they had the scholars walking. We used to always lead them up, and then we used to join at times with other companies if they wanted a bigger do for a special occasion. And then they had battalion parades when we used to go, say, up to Eccles to meet their parade theirs, and have a do there. And at times we used to go across to other parades to make up a bigger band, make a bigger noise, and that was... Oh, we were well disciplined. Oh yes, we learned quite a lot of ordinary drill. We all did. That's why when we were in the army, we had no trouble with it. We knew all the drills.
Was there any other military side of it?
No.
Just the drills. Yeah. Did you go on camp at all?
We used to go to camp for weeks. We had the battalion camp then, and the whole of the Manchester battalion used to go to Benrin side, you know, Landud, Norway, and they used to have camps there. I put up a camp for a week. We had a week there, and we all took the bands, all the instruments, mass bands. That wasn't in it. every company had its own band. We can imagine what it was all like when we were marching along the promenade in Landudno on a Sunday evening, and all the, about, say, 150 in the band, and about 1,000 of the brigade lads there. It was a good sight. It made you feel a bit bloody proud, you know.
Did you take to the drumming?
Oh, I was. We had a big improvement on that, because when the war started, and there were always quite a few people that were what the conscientious objectors, the non-combatant corps, you know, used to call them, and after so long, after about 1915, this government decided that these fellows who were on exemptions from what they call conscience grounds, they had to do so many parades in a week, and they had to go down to the barracks. In our case, it was Cross Lane Barracks, where the first thing like the ladies were, and after they'd been, they used to have to go out on parades, and after they'd been going out for a short period, they decided they'd have a band, you see. So they got a sergeant bandmaster there, and he came round to all the boys' brigades, church lads' brigades, boy scouts, all the bands, scrounging drummers and buglers. Eventually, I got in it. I went in it, and I was in it right up to the army again.
So you used to parade with the conscientious objectors?
We used to take them out to places like Longford Park and Eaton Park, Worsley, Sunday mornings, and take all Sunday but they were out, and we used to get half a crown every Sunday morning for taking them out, and we used to go out and use the machine gun, the seismic drums, as machine guns, you see. Well, I mean, they used to do this mock fighting for a sort of a training, and we used to march them out and then march them back about tea time up Sunday night.
What did you think of the conscientious objectors? Did you respect their views, or...?
We just ignored them. I wasn't old enough to worry about them. we had loads of them up there. When we was at Oswestry, we got gangs of them there, but we never took any notice of them. They had their own idea, and that was it.
Getting back to the start of the war, were you expecting war at all? You'd only be a young lad then.
I was only a lad.
Did you used to follow the international situation? Did you expect the war?
Oh, I followed it, obviously, because I was interested enough in it. But, you see, at the start of it, when our contemptible little army went out, which was mostly the volunteers, you see, all the volunteer regiments, and then they started they got such a hammering in 15 that they had to call practically everything. All the volunteer corps were sent out there, and then they started asking for volunteers, you know, Kitchener wants you. And in each town there was they called their own battalions, and they were called the Pals. They had the Manchester Pals, the Liverpool Pals, all the old Pals regiments, and they didn't have the khaki on, they had navy blue. And they all went out there, and there were thousands of them went out. Yeah.
How did the war affect your life and the work you did in the Belfast shipping companies? Did it affect your work at all?
Oh, it affected the job.
How?
Well, to begin with, at the start of the war, the Germans had a submarine in the Irish Sea, the U-29. And that ship was, submarine was getting fuelled by the Irish Free State in County Cork, in Cork, the harbour. There, they were fueling that U-29, and she used to float about in the St George's Channel there. And when ships came out from Liverpool or any of the ports on that side, they got to run a racket, and this fella, this U-29 fella, sunk miles of them there on that St George's Channel.
But how did it affect your actual work? I mean, the submarine losses, did that
In what way do you mean?
How did it affect your work, the war? I mean, that's what I meant, the operation of your office. I mean,
Oh, we got on all that, we did. Because, you see, there wasn't any bombs there, serious bombing like we had in the Second War. You see, half the town got smashed up in the Second War, didn't it, in the Blitz day. We had none of that.
Did many of the older men in your office volunteer?
Oh, yes. Yes, some of them volunteered.
How were they replaced?
Well, there was plenty of younger lads coming up, you see. And the younger lads had to more or less do it for them. And, of course, the engineers, as such, were all exempt in those days. But they found that women could go in engineering work, and women did go in every department of the country.
What about your office? Did you get any women in your
office? We had two women came in the office. Yes.
What jobs were they doing?
They were doing the same jobs as the men. Exactly. And they were put on the same wages as the men.
Did they fit in well?
Pardon?
Did they fit in well?
Fantastic, yeah.
There was no resentment from them?
No, there was never any resentment at all. No. I never saw any, even amongst the general public. The women were running the buses, or the trams rather. Yes, and the great thing about it was some of the women were far more sociable to you as a traveller on the trams, and all the men enjoyed them, and the women got on marvellous with us, and they did everything, ambulance driving, you name it. Yes.
And you thought that at the time you were impressed by the contribution they were making?
I always thought the world about women. I did. I always thought, in my opinion, they were every bit as clever as any men, any time. And they did engineering jobs and all that sort of thing, the same as the men, and just as efficiently.
What about other aspects of life? Did you suffer much from food or clothing shortages in the First War?
No. In the First War, as I said, my dad always said, but doubting solid prog, and that was what we used to get. Solid food. It never...
So the rationing didn't affect you?
Didn't affect me, it was in a minute. We knew where we were up to. and we knew what we could do.
Now, did the war affect your boys' brigade in its work? In it? You mentioned that you went and disbanded with the conscientious
yeah.
objectors. Was there any other way it changed the boys' brigade?
No, no. The only other difference we had was when we got this sort of this big band out of the small one for the NCC lads, non-combatant corps. That helped us with that.
Now you got promotion, didn't you, in 1670?
Corporal, yes.
Corporal. What did a corporal have to do?
Just the same as he did if he was a private.
You didn't have any extra jobs?
No. No, it was just a bit of a sort of a... Call it a little bit of an honour to get the extra stripes, you see. And a 3-year anchor, that's only 3 years if you anchor, and those two little diamonds were what they call 1-year efficiency badges, you see those. That's my drummer's badge. That's his drummer's badge, that's a 3-year anchor, and those are 1-year efficiency badges, you see. Oh no, we didn't.
Did a lot of boys join up from the boys'
brigade? Oh yes, Matt. I bet there would be at least 20 that's on that card there that didn't come home. Didn't come back.
So most of them would have joined up then?
Oh yes. They had to go in if they wasn't exempt. You see, if they hadn't got an exemption, they had to go.
Now, how did you come to join the army? You joined in
1917. I joined in 1917.
Do you remember when in
17? Yes. It was just after my birthday. Beginning of August, it was. And rather peculiarly, I had an exemption from work, through my work, because if your job was a... if it was say within the scope of government service in any way, shape or form, then you could get exemption. And any of the staff of where I was working, they could all get exemption.
If they wanted it.
Yes. And now three of them went in, voluntary. And then when it come to me, all my mates were all going in the army then, they'd got to, either Army, Navy, or Air Force. And I thought, oh, blow it, I never said anything to my parents. And they just got me calling up papers.
So they sent out the papers to you, the call-up.
Call-up.
But you didn't use the fact you could have got an exemption.
No, you could do. If you had an exemption, you had to notify them.
But you didn't. You just.
No, I just thought, well, I'm going in.
Did you know what it was like before you got there? Did you know what you were letting yourself in for?
I hadn't a clue. I hadn't a clue.
Had you not heard about what it was like on the Somme?
Oh, we all knew. Oh, we knew what the lads were going through, yes.
But you didn't realise how bad it would be.
Well, we went in. That was it.
Were you very patriotic at the time?
I've always been patriotic in all my life. I've always been a royalist. And I've always been very patriotic.
And was that one of the reasons you think that made you join up?
I think that was it, yeah. I wanted to do my bit. When we went in, we got 7 shillings a week. That was a shilling a day. And you had to pay 3/6 of that to your dependent, whoever he or she was. And so you got the other 3/6.
So you were taking a fair pay drop there, because you were getting...
Yes, well, the way it was all worked was when we... Well, take my case with my brother. Well, my brother went in 12 months before me. Well, when he'd been in so long... Well, any time after he went in the army, if Mum was skint financially, she could go down to a special school down near Salford Town Hall that was set aside for these dependents. And then you could go in there and get a loan to help them on till the pension come through. Well, with my elder brother, Mum got to 12 and 6 a week to supplement his 3 and 6. That was 16, wasn't it? 16 bob a week she was getting on him. Well, then, when she got his pension through, she got the whole pension and had to go back to this place and repay what she'd had as a loans, pay that back. So when it come to me, she went down again and she got 13 shillings a week on me, ten an extra what she got on him. And when she finished it and paid it all off, she got the complete pension book of 25 and 6 covering to two, the two of us, you see. Instead of 12 and 6, £1.5 and 6, and that was, helped her. But of course she got two of the other lads coming on later on. Always got one in the bag there to go out and get a bob or two, and we were never really flush, but we never short, went short of anything.
Now, you got your calling up papers, and so what happened exactly? You got them and you sent them back?
No, no, when you got them, you went to where you were told.
And where did you have to report?
I went to Ladysmith Barracks at Stanley Bridge.
Did they tell you to take anything with you?
I took nothing, only that card that they had. When you got there, right, you had to go through medical examination.
What was that? How strict?
Oh, a complete one, oh yes. A complete one.
Do you think it was a proper one, or they'd have let you through anyway?
Oh, they wouldn't let you through. Oh no, it was a proper one. My eldest brother, who was much fitter than me and much bigger, but he was only C4. He finished up in the Pioneer Corps. Didn't go near the front line.
But you passed.
I was A4.
What does that mean?
A1 underage. you won A1 till you were 19. But A4 was A1 underage, you see.
So this was August 1917?
Yeah.
And what else happened at Ladysmith Barracks?
Well, all you got, well, when it passed, if it passed and you knew you were in, you had to go and get rigged out with your car key.
Now, when was it decided what you'd join, whether you'd join the Army, Navy, Air Force, or what you'd join within the Army? When was that decided, or was it decided for you?
Oh, unless you put a request in specially, they would send you where they wanted, you see.
So you couldn't say which regiment you wanted to join?
Oh, no, you were just in. As I said, look at us, we got to met a crowd from, there was a crowd from Salford, and a crowd from Liverpool, Scotland Road in Liverpool, that was all joined up the same day as me, and all the gang of us, and we were all told to go home, take your series, change into your khaki, come back tomorrow morning, and then you were on the train and out to hospice.
So they issued you with your uniform,
the form from there,
and sent you home with your civvies to get trained.
But I had a warrant to go on the train out and get back.
What uniform did they issue you with?
Full khaki uniform.
Any kit?
Oh yes, you got a full kit and everything. When you didn't get that till you got down to your regiment.
Okay.
But you got your uniform there and then, and you were a soldier. You see, but you didn't have any rifle or anything like that.
So you went home?
Then you went back to straight into camp.
What did your mother say when you went home with your uniform?
She couldn't say much, it was there, and it was a case of do the best you can and try and get back home again, you see.
Was she upset?
Well, obviously, she lost two of us, hadn't she, really? So she wasn't very pleased. She'd have killed me if she'd have known about me not having the exemption. She'd have killed me. But, and the old fella wouldn't have left me much alone, I don't know. But anyway, when we got down there to come to Oswestry, see where the place.
So that was where you were sent on the train?
We were sent there, and then that was where the camp was.
And who were you joining at Oswestry? Which battalion? Of
well,
which
when we got down there, we were put in the 5th King's Liverpools. The 5th King's Liverpools.
And what sort of a reception did they give you? How was it organised when you got down there?
There was no regiment. We formed it. We were all new. The only part of the 5th King's Liverpool was in France or on active service. And we were starting a new, complete King's Liverpool regiment. And the only, the other thing about it was that when we did go in, we weren't given, put in the 5th King's, I've got it wrong now, we were put in the 6th King's Liverpool Rifles. Now they, as rifle regiments, wore black buttons and a black hat cap badge.
So that's who you joined
first.
First.
Now, we didn't have to do any button cleaning, brass buttons out like that. And we had to, so instead of carrying the rifle at the slope like that, we had to carry it at the trail alongside the wayside. But when, after a month, the blow came, you see, because we'd been marvellous, no black, no button clean or anything like that. And then T5 Kings, we were transferred from the 6 Kings to the T5 Kings. That was a territorial regiment, like the T1 Fusiliers are. Then we had some brass buttons, brass cap badges and all the rest of it. But the old button stick had to come out. And we were in them till we went abroad.
Well, I want to ask you about your time. You were at Oswestry until you went abroad.
Yes, yeah.
What, so if you could just go through some stuff, some questions about that.
Right.
What conditions of service? How were you accommodated at Oswestry?
Oh, right, huts, wooden huts.
How many in it?
Well, the wooden hut, there was a corporal in charge of each, and there was, let me see, 20 in each hut.
And what kind of bed would you have?
Oh, ordinary, a good, wooden bed, you know, you had to make with planks, and a good palliasse. And, oh, it's quite comfortable.
Did you have anywhere to put your kit and your possessions?
Oh, yes, you had your own cupboard style of thing, where you had to put all your gear, and you had to have it all tidy every day. You see, when you got up in the morning, you had to make your bed, fold it up, and it just laid along the wall of the hut. And it all had to be nice, neat and tidy. And every day, a different one had the orderly job. Was the orderly man, you see.
I'll come back to that, the orderly. What else was in the hut? Did you have any heating?
Oh, yes, the plenty of heating. Yes.
What was it from?
A big, what do you call it, stove.
In the middle?
Yes. There's a big...
Coal-fired stove.
Yes. Combustion stove. A big combustion stove.
So you were warm enough?
Oh, we're always warm enough, yeah.
What about toilets? Were there any toilets or washing facilities in the hut?
Oh, you got washing facilities. What do they call the... what's that? It was a special building they all went to. There was a toilets there and washing facilities and everything. There wasn't any hot water, you know, but we didn't go to that extent, but we were all right. We didn't do bad with it. And, as I say, one man had to be what was the orderly man each day.
What did that entail?
He didn't go on parade at all. All he had to do was to go around and make sure that everything in the hut was tidy, because the warrant officers and the and pull officers used to come round, one of them at least, in the morning for an inspection, and it had to be clean.
That was a hut inspection?
That was hut inspection, yeah.